For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Our minhag, go back and we'll hit the highlights. Vayechi, this is the concluding parsha of Bereishis. Chazak, chazak, v'nis chazak. By the way, when we say that, we're saying we should be strong to carry out the teachings that we just learned in this book. Okay, in the Sefer. Okay, so Vayechi opens up with the account of Yaakov Avinu being the last 17 years of his earthly life in Egypt, and he feels he's about to pass away. Therefore, he calls Yosef and tells him, do me a chesed shel emes. A chesed shel emes is always referred to something to do with the burying the dead or taking care of the dead. It's a true chesed, because other types of act of kindness, you might expect something in return. Obviously, here you're not going to get anything in return. It's a true act of chesed, and he says, don't bury me in Mitzrayim. This is an important statement for our first exile, right? No matter how good it is for us, we're in exile, and Egypt was very good for us when we first came down, right? So Yaakov Avinu was making a statement. You guys have to live here for whatever reasons, but don't forget it's not home. I don't even want to be buried here. Al na tikraveni b'mitzrayim. Don't bury me in Mitzrayim. Take me out of here. That's what he tells Yosef. And then he makes him swear to that fact. Okay. Yaakov gets ill and he asks, again towards the end of his life, he asks Yosef to bring his two sons, Menashe and Ephraim, and he gives them a special blessing. This is followed by all the children of Yaakov Avinu, coming before him, and each one getting a unique bracha, a unique blessing fitting for their special mission, their unique way of serving Hashem, if you will. Okay? And after each one's individual brachas, which are very prophetic, Yaakov Avinu is seen in the future. He's seen some of the great people that will come from these individual tribes, like from Don. He prophesizes about Shimshon, Samson. He prophesizes about Gideon. He prophesizes about David HaMelech when he talks about Yehuda. Okay. And then, at the end of this, we find that Yaakov Avinu passes away, and things are done to his body, embalming, which is a big halakha question. That's not something we do. And, this is a special exception. And then he is escorted out of Egypt, and he's taken to Machpelah. At this time, Esau rears his ugly head. And I do mean ugly head because it comes rolling off because of an incident here. Well, hopefully we'll talk about it. At Machpelah, he argues that he should get that final burial spot and not Yaakov, his brother. Okay. There is a lot of commentary of what happened at Machpelah. A lot of kings from all the nations wanted to start war at this time, but they saw the honor being bestowed upon Yaakov Avinu. A lot of different interesting commentaries here. But basically, Yaakov Avinu is buried there, and then Yosef returns home, and subtle signs of the exile already start. Subtle signs of the start of the Jews looking different in the Egyptians' eyes. They're not given the same respect and honor as before. Yosef is the first to die of his brothers, and he makes them swear to take his bones out of there when there is the final exodus. And he says those magic words, the words of redemption, Pakod Yifkod, Hashem will surely remember you. He will take you out of here. These are the words that Yaakov Avinu told Yosef. Yosef tells the brothers. They're handed down. And when the Redeemer, Moshe Rabbeinu, comes to Egypt, that's the sign. Those words, there's only one person alive who will recognize those words to know that he's the legitimate redeemer, and that is Serach, the daughter of Asher. She lived many, many years. So they are asking the elders, you know, and they brought Serach, and they saw this guy's coming, and he used these words. That's it. Pakod yipkod. Pakad pakadati. Those are the words of redemption. He is the true redeemer. Okay. Serach is a very interesting person anyways. The daughter of Asher was one of nine people to enter Gan Eden alive. She broke the news to Yaakov easy that Yosef was still alive. So, you know, he wouldn't, the shock wouldn't cause him to have, let's say, a heart attack or something, right? So Yaakov gave her a bracha. You revive my spirit. May yours always live. Very interesting word, Serach. And later she comes up in Shmuel. In the book of Samuel, she's called an Isha Chachama, a wise lady, who saved the entire town because there was a rebel to the kingdom, and Yoav, the general of David's army, wanted to wipe them all out, the whole town. And she said, what if I, you know, I'll get them that, you know, Shevi ben Bichri. That was the name of this rebel. So she convinced the elders to cut this guy's head off, throw it over the wall, and therefore the general Yoav was satisfied with that, obviously, and that town didn't have to be destroyed. A very interesting personality. Serach Bas Asher. Okay. Mentioned one more thing. Yosef, the Parsha ends. The book of Bereishis ends. By Yamas Yosef. Yosef dies 110 years old. And his coffin is placed in the Nile River. And the words here, by Yisem, it was placed, his coffin is a play on two words, voy, sam, oy, vey, like, where it was put. Because when he was initially buried, that field that he was buried in was blessed. So everybody started taking his coffin and putting it in their field. So it would be blessed, because Yosef was a tzaddik. So Paro took the coffin and put it in the Nile River. So the whole of Egypt would be blessed. But they also knew about this shvua, this swear of Yosef, that Israel cannot leave without taking his bones out. So they put him in a lead coffin and put him at the bottom of the Nile River, hoping to keep the Jews in Egypt forever. They knew that we would not leave without his bones. And that is an amazing miracle that's going to happen with Moshe Rabbeinu, how he got the Aron, how he got the coffin of Yosef out of the Nile River, right? During that Exodus, and it says it specifically in the verses that he did so. Yosef is the first to die of his brothers, very significant, because really you would think he'd be one of the last, because he was one of the younger brothers, right? Next to the youngest. But Rabbanus shortens a person's life. That's what it said. So I'll tell you that position of Rabbanus, literally a rabbi, or any position of authority or a political type of position where you have so much achraya, so much responsibility. So what goes with that is usually a lot of heartache and everything else, and that shortens a person's life. And that is why he is the first, one of the reasons he's the first to die of the brothers. We'll stop. Yaakov, midah keneged midah, measure for measure. Measure for measure, he tells Yosef, since you're taking care of my burial, I'm going to give you your burial spot, Shechem. Shechem is the burial spot of Yosef. It's one of three spots that they say, supposedly, that the non-Jewish world, the Arabs, whatever it is, cannot argue that it's truly ours. Right? We pay the full amount of money and, you know, like, over amount. And those three places are, okay, here, the grave spot of Yosef in Shechem, Machpelah, right? What's the other one? The other one? No, it's not that. That's interesting. It's not there. It's the base of Migdash, the place of the base of Migdash that Dovid HaMelech bought. Okay. Now we're going back. We're hitting the highlights. I want to open up with a quick story. Famous story of the Chofetz Chaim, who... in reference to the brachas that are given to all the children. That's the highlight of the Parsha, if you will, if one can say that. As we know, every word in the Torah is just as holy as any other word. But at any rate, one of the highlights of this Parsha is the blessings to the 12 tribes. And everyone is given a unique blessing, we mentioned, describing their individual talents and skills, contributions. Now, this is very, very significant to us. The Chofetz Chaim put it this way. He says that it's like spokes to a wheel, 12 spokes to a wheel, right? All exactly centered, right, to the middle. All equal distance to the center, which represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And individually, these spokes are very important, but how much more so with their interaction with each other, right? So that is the bracha that Yaakov gives. He says, Vayivarech oisam, he blessed them, ish asher kir v'chaso, every man according to his blessing, Beirach oisam, and then an inclusive blessing, that all their blessings, individual blessings, should be used for the general Klal Yisrael, for the general unity of all Yisrael. And Chofetz Chaim put it like this, when you come into a country, you don't ask, why do they have a Marines, and an Air Force, and a Navy, and an Army? You need them all. Same thing in Israel. Why is there Vishnus Hasidim? Why are there Sephardim? Why is there, you know, Litvox, whatever, why is there Yekis, right? Klal Yisrael needs them all. You know, different ways to serve Hashem. Now, you know, we have different nusachim, different ways of praying, right? Nusach Ashkenaz, most of us pray, right? Rachel, you probably daven Nusach Sfard. No, okay. A lot of Israelis daven Sfard. There's Arizal, which is very Kabbalistic. A lot of Hasidim daven that. But originally, there was 12. There was 12. Each tribe had their own unique shar. They had the only gate in heaven, their own unique nusach. That was their pipeline to Shemayim, to heaven, if you will. And I say that's one of the geniuses of the Arizal, that particular nusach, according to Kabbalah, it's like a master key. It opens up all those gates. Since today we don't know each nusach. So a lot of people, were from Ben Yehuda and Ben Yamin, the rest of us who are not Kohanim, because the other 10 tribes were lost. Most of us are from Yehuda, right? Ben Yamin was a relatively small tribe. Yehuda was a large tribe. So interesting. It's going to be an interesting little bit of a blessing that, I don't know if it's a hint to what we're going through, but when Yehuda does come up for the blessings by our father, he says, Atah yaducha achicha, your brothers will know you. You'll be known to your brothers. So that means a lot of things. I never saw a commentary for it to mean that today most of us are from Yehuda. That's a side thing. But the point is, your brothers will know you, meaning everybody will acknowledge you. Everybody will call you Jews, Yehudim, from Yehuda. Okay, and it means a lot of other things. He represents the kings, you know, and everybody will recognize you as the leader. There is a certain amount of Maase Avo, similar bonding, you know, the actions of our forefathers embed certain spiritual character traits, even with them, even with the Shvatim, okay, even with them. So they are still with us, right, those character traits. Not as much as when we talk about the Avos, but they also have that concept. As a matter of fact, they say because of Yosef remaining morally pure, not giving in to Ashes Potiphar, right, when she tried to seduce him, and Sari Meno, when she was abducted by Paro, so therefore the males because of Yosef and the females because of Sari Meno remained pure, morally pure in Egypt the whole time there, which is an amazing thing because you don't realize how one is affected by environment, and that was a very depraved moral society. Okay, so there it is, Amasi Abbas. Okay, so sorry, Mano, that's not such a big chiddush to us, right, as well, but by Yosef, who's not one of the Abbas, that we see that does continue, that, those traits. The main point I wanted to get out here, and reference that story of the Chofetz Chaim, that Jews need all these people with their unique ways of serving God, right? Everybody, that's how it relates to us, more or less, right? Okay? So we say each Shevet had a unique path, and Yaakov Avinu gave him a bracha accordingly. So too, every person in Israel. You see people, you know, like, for some, everybody has to do all 613 mitzvahs, right? Right. But, however, you see at times that people have a certain push, a certain leaning, or a certain sensitivity to bikur cholim, visiting the sick in the hospital, or Sadaka or haknasas orachim, taking in guests. You see, you know, other people, you know, they're into learning. Other people davening. They live for the davening. Whatever it is, okay? So, obviously there's many, many more, but the point is, all these are very, very essential, right? And we need all these different paths to serve Hashem. And the only condition is, as Yaakov Avinu blesses his children, right? Kir b'chasa, like your bracha, berech oisam, it should be inclusive within Klal Yisrael. You gotta use these blessings for, you know, with a unity, right? The rest of Israel. Okay. Another aspect, or maybe the same with this, that each shevet, every tribe, have their own unique character and ability, and Yaakov Avinu blessed them accordingly. That a person has to be directed on the path of his strength, that thing that's suited for him. Everybody has a unique mission. Okay? And there's roles. There is roles in Judaism, right? No one can play the role of a Kohen, and no one has right to be jealous of a Kohen, and no one has the right to be jealous of a man, or no one has the right to be jealous, anything in this, right? There's roles in Judaism, and they're all needed. So this is even a further breakdown. And that's why only Yehuda can become the Melech, you know, and no one can argue with that. And not only that, if someone argues with it, they gotta, you know, that's what happened with Yosef. They got scared that he was taking on kingship, rulership. That's what the brother said. And from this portion, it says that the staff will never part from Yehuda. Yehuda is where kings come from, and no one else, even Yosef, who met well, and it was before the time of kings and all these things, no, that's his role. Levi is kahuna. And that's why, by the way, the Hashmonaim we mentioned, their descendants were all wiped out, because even though there was no one as righteous as them, but their descendants were wiped out because they took on the crown of royalty, of kingdom, and they were from Levi. I think Rambam brings this down, that even you could be as righteous as them, and there was nobody like them. But still, you can't tamper with the brachas of Yaakov Avinu. Okay, that's the main thing. Person cannot covet somebody else, cannot assert someone else's tachlis, someone else's mission, right? Because, what's the bottom line? Why there's no reason for jealousy and coveting in Israel is that you have to always remember you're part of a greater klal. You're part of, right? The sum is greater than its parts, right? So everybody has to know their place. We have a very big, hard time with this in this society, knowing your place. And we can only function as a unit where everyone realizes their particular job, and that's their job, and no one else's job. Okay. Interesting, the two parshas that are called Chaya, you know, like life, Chaya Sarah, right? The life of Sarah, and Vayechi, right, both talk about the death of Sarah Imenu and of Yaakov Avinu. And the answer, the Talmud uses the statement that Tzadikim b'misasam chayim. In their death, they're like alive. While Rishayim, or wicked people, in their life, they're like dead. So we, you know, obviously we believe in two worlds, and we believe the person's righteous deeds, right, they go on living, and their legacy goes on living, and their teachings go on living through their descendants. So therefore, we can call this Parsha Vayechi. Even though Yaakov Avinu dies, in a sense, Yaakov Avinu lomeis. He didn't die. He's alive and with us. Right? His legacy, his teachings, right? Everything that he brought down to us. Okay. First person ever mentioned to be sick in the Torah is this week's Parsha, Yaakov Avinu. Very, very interesting. You know that custom, you know, that, you know, people say God bless you when you sneeze. You know why that was? Why that is? That's how people used to die. Just like God blew the breath of life through the nostrils of Adam, right? Therefore, when a person got ready to expire, right, that the neshama came out of the nostrils, right? So when a person sneezed, they used to die. So that's where that custom comes from. For the first time, we had a person, this novel thing where a person got sick. And that's why it says in the pasuk, it says, behold, hine, avicha choyle. Behold, like it was a new thing. It never happened before. Behold, your father is sick. So it says that Yaakov Avinu asked for this. He asked for sickness to come into the world. Okay? Let's make it even more complicated. Until Avram's time, there was no such thing as an old person. When I mean nobody showing signs of old age, such as gray hair, right, and wrinkles. right? Avram said, it's not a good thing. You know, Hashem, it'd be good if a person has signs of old age. That way, he'll know that, you know, his time is coming, and he'll have time to prepare and instruct, you know, he'll have time to prepare to tshuva. So Hashem said, you know, Avram, you asked for a good thing, I'm going to start with you. You'll be the first person to have signs of old age, and that's why, for the first time, you see the words, for Avram Zakin Ba B'yamim, and Avram was old. It never says that about anybody else. Yitzchak, right, had these yisurin, these afflictions before he died. He was blind, right? So they say there also. That never happened before. Yitzchak prayed for it. It'd be good. It would atone for a person's sins before he leaves for this world. Yaakov Avinu said, Hashem, not good for a person to die so suddenly. Let him first get an illness. That way he can set his house in order, instruct his children, right? Do tshuva. Hashem again said, you ask for a good thing, I'm going to start with you. And therefore it says, V'nei avicha chayla. So, it's interesting, you know, he grew up, you know, reading all these fairy tales and everything, and if you had three wishes from the lantern or whatever, right, what would you ask for? Youth, health, right? What did the patriarchs ask for? Give us old age, sickness, and illness before we die. Why? Because we look at things from this world, and this world only. And the Avos, they looked at things, what's good for eternity? What's good for the Jewish neshama? And for the Jewish neshama, signs of old age, afflictions, and illness is the best thing. So that's an important lesson when we see a lot of things happening to us that we never have the right to say this to another Jew. We always should sympathize and comfort them. When ourselves we go through problems, no, there's a reason for these things, and really it is for our ultimate benefit. Let's stop. It's very famous in the Parsha. Yaakov Avinu blesses the children of Yosef, right? Is Simcha Elokim Kephraim Bekimanasha. May God, may the Jewish people, you know, bless their sons to be like Ephraim and Manasseh. And we know the custom, Friday night, right? Right, bench the girls or the daughters, right? And you'd be like the matriarchs, right? Sarah, Rachel, Leah, right? So naturally, you would think when you're blessing the sons, may you be like Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And yet, it's not that way. We say, let it be like Ephraim and Manasseh. That's who they should be like, not like Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And Ephraim and Manasseh were great. There's no doubt about it. But they weren't Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So obviously there must be something here that Yaakov Avinu saw in Ephraim and Manasseh that his descendants would need in the long exile for all eternity, that even Avram, Yitzchak evidently didn't have that experience, whatever, or that quality. It's hard to say that, right? What was it? What was it that Ephraim and Manasseh had such a valuable quality that that's what we should bless our children throughout the long goals? If you think about it, they're the first two Jews born in exile, right? You think about it, in Egypt, how many Jews were there? Four. You got four Jews. You got Yosef, his wife, and these two children. That's it. And they are part of the higher echelons of this Egyptian society, right? And despite the foreign influences, despite the temptations of the royal court, which they were a major part of, right? And their budding political careers, if you will, right? They remained loyal and devoted to the Masorah, to their teachings of their father and grandfather and great-grandfather, and stayed loyal, strong Jews, right? And they even, you know, they did all sorts of things to make the brothers feel comfortable. They did not abandon their own kind, their own kin, their own legacy, and their own Yiddishkeit for the sake of Egyptian aristocracy. Yaakov Avinu saw that in our long exile, that was going to be the number one problem, assimilation, always trying to curry favor from the royal courts of our times, right? That's the biggest danger, that you'll compromise. You don't have to look so frum. You don't have to look so Jewish, right? You know, after all, you know, you know, go along to get along, right? No. No. Ephraim Manasseh show you what the Jew is supposed to be like in Golis. Even if your father is viceroy of the land, and the Medrash says after after Paro died, that Yosef's actually the king for 40 years. According to one opinion, the Medrash, Yosef is the king for 40 years. So even if your father is the king of the land, right, of Egypt, and you have nothing to fear, right, you could assimilate if you wanted, so to speak, because you have, you know, protection, right? No, if I'm not sure, no, your first loyalty comes to Yiddishkeit. We see this over and over again. Yosef says, when he calls the names of his children, he says, Be'eretz Onya, in the land of my suffering. He's viceroy of all Egypt. He's doing great. No, it's a land of my suffering because it's not home. It's not Israel. Right? And we have this repeated next week's parsha with Kahat naming his children. Moshe names his children Gershom. I'm a stranger there. Right? Again, even though these people had it well, Levi had no servitude in Egypt. But still, you know, it's not home. So that's the idea of remaining, this loyalty. And by the way, it even goes further because the family of Ephraim and Manasseh were considered abominations, a shepherd family who was despised by the Egyptians. And that didn't stop them from associating very strongly with their brothers, their uncles actually, when they came down, okay? Another point. If you notice what happens on the blessings, right, Ephraim and Manasseh, Ephraim is the younger one, and he is given the blessing, right? Yaakov switches his hand, and he's given the blessing of the Bechor, of the firstborn, right? And what happens? First of all, they say, the commentators bring down, flourishing, Ephraim showed humility. Even though he was blessed above his older brother, he remained humble. It didn't go to his head, right? And Manasseh, for his part, didn't get jealous. Goes, hey, what is this? My brother getting blessed before me, right? And of all people to do it, Yaakov Avinu, shouldn't he learn, you know, what he did with Yosef, causing jealousy and hatred with the brothers? No, it comes a full tikkun to such a point, right, that Ephraim shows no haughtiness over being given a bracha over his brother, and Manasseh shows no ill feelings, jealousy. Those are two qualities also we need in Golis. Not to be jealous of each other, of our fellow Jew. And if a person happens to look upon appearances that he has a higher position or a better job or whatever it is, right, not to be conceited over your fellow Jew. So the combination, the unselfish, these are the qualities you need in exile. Remember, again, we're going down to the first exile, the paradigm of all exiles, right? Egypt. We're supposed to learn out from it why we're in this exile, what we can do to get out of it. And what we learn from here, these brachas, everybody should be like Ephraim and Manasseh is the bracha, an unselfish behavior. That should be the model for all of us, for all generations. The strength to maintain your Yiddishkeit in a hostile environment, and that means any environment that's not Israel is hostile, whether at this particular time they're smiling at us or not, right? To remain loyal to your tradition. And the other, amongst ourselves. Amongst ourselves, no jealousy or haughtiness, right? So that's it. Our interaction to the Goyisha world is to remain distinct. We obey the laws of the country. We're loyal citizens. Let's make distinct, though, our priority to the Yiddishkeit. And amongst ourselves, right, that's unity. Unity, no hate, no jealousy, no coveting, and no haughtiness, okay? When these people made mistakes, it was on a very great level. For example, when Yaakov is talking to Yosef, and he says, you know, don't bury me here, but bury me in Israel, and then he starts to mention, this is chapter 48, right? 48, verse 7. He talks about when he came to Padan, that Mesalai, Rachel, that Rachel died on me, right? And I buried her on the road to Ephrathah, right? And that's Beis Lechem. I didn't even go the extra distance to bury her in the city proper, on the side of the road there, which doesn't seem very dignified, right? Especially for one of the matriarchs, especially Rachel. So Rashi brings down here, he says, He says, and I know, I didn't even bother myself to bring her into the city proper, and I know you have like a taina against me. You know, you kind of have like a resentment. Because that was his mother. That was Yosef's mother. Why I didn't give her more proper burial? Why did I bring her at least into the city proper? Right? So Yaakov Avinu explains in these verses, he explains to Yosef, he says, I did it al pi hadibur. You don't understand. Of course I would have gone any length for Rachel, his beloved wife. And we all know how much Yaakov loved her. But why did I do it? Hashem said it. Why? And then he quotes Yirmiyah, because it will happen at the end of days, and all through, till the end of days, Rachel is the one that's always crying over her children. And as her prayers are going to be heard, Shuvu Bonim Lagvulam, right? Let the children return to the... That's what Yirmiyah says. Stop your crying, Rachel. Hashem has heard it. And I'll return your sons to their borders. I'll return your sons to your borders. So that was a special role that Rachel Imenu had. A very special role. And that's why what appears to us is something bizarre. You know, like everybody's buried in Machpelah. All the patriarchs and matriarchs except this one. Right? Doesn't seem to make sense. It doesn't seem to be fair. It seems like she gets the fuzzy end of the lollipop. Right? So, that's because we don't know what a Kodesh Baruch Hu knows. Who knows past, present, and all of the future. And he sees in the future that Rachel's tomb will be the site of millions of Jewish prayers to this very day. Right? It's one of the most popular sites, right, to pray to Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that is a lot of things where we think that certain, you know, look, a tzedakah like her, not very, what? There's reasons for it. Kodesh Baruch Hu has reasons. He sees everything. And everything's being pay for the ultimate benefit for Rachel and for her children. Her prayers are heard. Now, let me just finish this thought. What Chaim brought up. So, Yosef, we said, held a grudge. He had some sort of a grudge over Yaakov for burying Rachel there, which didn't look dignified. And even though we now know that her burial guarantees that her descendants will return home safely, and upon hearing this, what was Yosef's reaction? You know, he must have said, how could I have ever questioned my father? How could I question his way? After hearing the answer, you know, how could I question his motives? Well, let me tell you something. We're not on Yosef's level. And we see things, you know, Hashem's ways are much more hidden and much more deeper than even Yaakov Avinu. And we can't fathom the meaning of events, and we have questioned how the way Kodesh Baruch Hu conducts his world and things happen to individuals, we should remember this lesson. What strikes us as the very worst, that may be preparations for the very best. That's from Rav Palm. It's a big lesson there. Kevar Rachel is probably one of the three places that is most, you know, populated with prayers, you know, the Kaisel, Machpelah, and Kevar Rachel. It's because we have tunnel vision. That's what it means. We have tunnel vision. This is God sees past, present, and future, and he's always looking for the eternal benefit, right? We see things right now, so to us, it looks bad. From our standpoint, the very worst is preparation for the very best. But from the standpoint of Kodesh Baruch Hu, it's all good. And in the future, we'll see it's all good. It's a famous story, by the way, in connection with Kevar Rachel and this story about Jeremiah. Saying, Rachel, you know, stop your crying. Hashem's heard it. So, Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz used to go to Kevar Rachel and pray. And he says, Rachel, the Navi, Yirmiyah, he says, you should stop your crying. Right? I'm telling you, keep crying for us. If you remember back in Vayeshev, we have an incident of Reuben moving the bed of Yaakov Avinu into his mother's tent, Leah. And he was wrong, very, very wrong, but his motivation was very sincere, the honor of his mother, who had played second fiddle to Rachel, and now has to play second fiddle to her maidservant, Bilhah? That bothered her. So he moved the bed. Very wrong thing to do. But at any rate, it's interesting, you know, that night, I don't know if you remember, we said that night, Bilhah would have conceived, and those tribes would have been considered tribes of Rachel. those two would have been Ephraim and Manasseh. And that's what it means in our Torah portion. If you look at chapter 48, verse 2, I believe, verse 5, 48, verse 5, he speaks to Yosef, Yaakov, and he says, "And behold, your two children that were born to you, Mitzrayim, right, Lehem, they're mine. Ephraim and Manasseh, they're like Reuben and Shimon." Isn't that amazing? Because literally they're mine. Yaakov Avinu understood that they were literally supposed to be like Reuben and Shimon. They were supposed to be children of Bilhah. Says the Baal HaTurim, to emphasize the point, the numerical value of Ephraim and Manasseh equals Reuben and Shimon. Beginning of the parsha again, Vayichi Yaakov. Yaakov lived, right? What's the numerical value of Yichi? We like to play with these things just to give you guys something to think about. Vayichi is what? 30, 26, 34. 34, because the true years of his life were with his son Yosef. Yosef was how old when he was sold? 17. 17. And how many years do you live at the end of his life with Yosef? 17. Very interesting. He sustained Yosef the first 17 years of his life. And measure for measure, Yosef sustained Yaakov, if you will, for the last 17 years. So those were the real years of Yaakov. Vayichi, those were really life from those 34 years with Yosef. There's another hint to the other 130 years, and that is Me'odi. Me'odi Ada Yom Hazeh, chapter 48, verse 16. Me'odi is 130. So Me'odi, the 130 years, Ad Hayom Hazeh, until this day, right? Until that day, he was 130. Then he lived in Egypt another 17 years, which is Hazeh. You got it? Me'odi, 130, Ad Hayom Hazeh. Hazeh, right now, it means right now, the numerical value of 17. So that's the 147. I'm bringing this out. That's how many years he lived. I'm bringing this out not to be cute, even though it's a cute thing for me to be cute. Is that redundant? Maybe. Okay. But the point is, I'm trying to show you that the Torah has infinite, deeper levels. And, you know, okay, Gematrius is one of those things, the codes that we see every now and then that we point out. I'm just trying to show you that there's many, many surfaces to the Torah. There's a blessing that's given to Ephraim and Manasseh. Vayidgu l'roiv bekerav ha'aretz. That they should be fruitful and multiply like fish in the midst of the land. It's a beautiful bracha, no? One problem with it. Right between the eyes. Both barrels. That's right. Fish don't live in that. That's the exact point. You know, all of Israel is called Ephraim by the Navi. A lot of the prophets will refer to Israel as Ephraim, my son Ephraim. So that's just it. Fish do not thrive, do not survive on land. So too, the survival of the Jew is as unnatural as that, as a fish living on land, right? It's miraculous, right? That's the point of the bracha. That's the Chasam Sofer, he brings this down. That's a representative idea that we are Lamala of Meteva, we're above nature, we're built into the system of Hashem's special Hashgacha Prati, personal supervision, and miracles. We survive, right, like fish in the midst of the land. No one else has survived what we survive. I'm Sridei Cherub, a nation that survived, we're survivors. That's what the Jewish people are. No one else have gone through what we've gone through and are still here to talk about it. And we mentioned it before, you know, they say that's one of the biggest proofs of God, that the Jewish people are still here. Primary source for Mashiach is in our parsha, Yehuda. Let's go to the blessings of Yehuda. Probably something we can relate to more than the others. They're all equally important, of course. But it says, Lo Yasur Shevet in Yehuda, chapter 49, verse 10. The staff, you know, the scepter will never part from Yehuda. Representing the kings, right? Ad ki yavo Shiloh. Very mysterious. What does that mean? Commentaries grapple until he comes to Shiloh. Velo yikat amim. And at that time, all the nations will recognize him as king. In other words, Mashiach will be king over Israel until ad yavo Shiloh. Some people say that's the name of Mashiach, right? if I'm not mistaken, 343, and Mashiach, I think it's the same gematria, something like that. I'm just saying, Yavo Shilo is the same numerical value as Mashiach. Some people say that's the name Mashiach, some people first, he will be king over Israel, and then, until Shilo, the place, there's a place called Shilo also, below Yikat Amin, there all the nations will recognize him as king. Whatever it is, this is a primary source for Mashiach in the Torah. Also, in this bracha to Yehuda, we mentioned already this idea that Yehuda, Ata Yiducha Achicha, everybody will recognize you as the king, everybody will be called by your name Yehuda, but even more, very, very relevant to what we said before about us being survivors. We are called Yehuda because Yehuda describes the essence of all Jews. And this verse that says, Gur Aryeh, verse 9, Gur Aryeh Yehuda, right? It says, B'ni Alisa Kara Ravas Ka'aryeh Ukalavi Niyakamenu. It says, when you crouch down still like a lion, which means the greatness of Yehuda is even when he's down, even those times that we're down, right, we still don't give up. We're still like a lion. When a lion's down, you don't, you know, mess with him. You realize he has the strength to get up. The Jews, when even we're down in the matzah of a down or whatever the situation is in our personal lives, right, we still have that ability of an Aryeh, of a lion, to conquer it, conquer the situation, the circumstance, the trouble, and get up from it. Right? Kara Ravas Ka'aryeh Ukalavi Miyakamenu. Okay? That's important. These brachas are given in order of their age, and yet one exception is here. Does anybody know it? The one exception to the brachas that are given chronologically, right, Yisachar was the older brother, Zebulun gets the brachas first. Don't you want to know why? Because Zebulun supported Yisachar. Zebulun, right, was a merchant, he was out in the field, and he supported Yisachar so he could sit and learn Torah. He gets equal share of Yisachar's Torah learning. And not only that, his bracha precedes Yisachar, because if it wasn't for him, Yisachar wouldn't be able to have learned Torah. So to this very day, you have such a concept, a Zebulun-Yisachar contract. People who can't learn, for whatever reasons, right, they try to get a partner, you know, in yeshiva, and they support him while he learns, and they get an equal share of each other's portion. You know, it says in Pirkei Avos, in Ein Kemach, Ein Torah. There's no, you know, flour, no, like, pernos, no sustenance, there's no Torah, Ein Torah, Ein Kemach. So they say they strengthen each other. It was also Yisachar's learning in yeshiva that made Zebulun successful as a merchant. Because, right, he's only working to support me. So my Torah learning is going to make him successful in the economic sphere so he can support me, right? There's no higher thing than that. So that, anyway, Zebulun is giving preference to this, and that should be an example to all of us, the importance of tzedakah and supporting Torah institutions in general. So it goes in detail about him being buried because that is exactly the way we will encamp in the desert. There's a reference to this later in Shmos that the way they carry the coffin of Yaakov is exactly the way they carry the Aron on their travels, the same groupings. Okay? There's a lot of significance. Yaakov cut down the Eshel trees for the tabernacle and brought them down to Egypt. He's representative of, you know, this Masi Avos concept, which is very strong with us. He's the Jew of exile. It's elaborated. He's also blessed, the Nile River was blessed, all of Egypt was blessed, so it became a huge funeral. Everybody, that's what the Torah describes, a huge funeral where everybody paid their respects to Yaakov Avinu. Yitzchak, you're right, Yitzchak was more a secret because he had an Esav. And like Esav already caused, you know, trouble in the world. Avram Avinu also was a tremendous time of mourning for the entire world. It says the world lost its captain. Right? But you're right. Yaakov Avinu is elaborated more. And in general, we have more, probably, I think we have more stories about Yaakov Avinu than the rest. He's our Jew. He's the Jew of exile. He's the one that we can relate to. That might be part of the reason. It says Yaakov Avinu lo meis. By Avram and Yitzchak, it mentions they died. It says they meis. But if you look at Yaakov, chapter 49, 33. He held his strength. He wanted to bless his, he got conquered death in a certain respect in that he was not ready to go. He wanted to give out certain blessings, and he gave them, and then, verse 33, Vayakal Yaakov, the Tzavos is born up. He finished commanding his children. Then he gathered his legs, when he was ready, he went. He gathered his legs onto the bed. Vayigva, Vayesaf, and I don't know, Vayigva, I guess, is the expired, and he was gathered to his people. But it doesn't actually say the word but by all the offers it says that, Vayesef Alamav, but by Avram Yitzchak it says, Vayamas. It always says the actual word death. So the Talmud goes into the Gemara says, Yagavina Lomes. What does it mean, Lomes? They did all this embalming and buried him for no reason. We know that he died, but there's something the Gemara is trying to hint at here. And the fact it doesn't say the word mace by Yaakov, and the hint is that he had, again, the Bechir of the Avos. He was the chosen of the patriarchs. So the point here is that Yaakov Avinu, more than anybody else, they say his image was etched on the throne of glory, the perfect man. I don't know what this means. He says he looked like Adam, who was made by Hashem himself, Yaakov Avinu. These are all statements from the Gemara. The Sisa Lila, very mystical book, says Yaakov Avinu, what it means he didn't die is the following. That he perfected his body to such an extent like Adam before the sin, that it was no contradiction to the soul. Okay? The physical and spiritual were in harmony. Death is a excruciating, painful experience only to the extent that one has made his physicality that much, physical, materialistic. So the way it's described in the Gemara is like taking a ball of wool out of thorns. While the death, the person's wicked, while the righteous who spiritualize their physicality, they say it's like taking a hair out of milk. The transition from this world to the next world is like taking a hair out of milk. Yaakov Avinu took off his coat and went from this world to the next world. He lived such a spiritual life here that he just changed garments and went to the next transition as smooth as a person can go. That's what it means. One of the things it means that he didn't die, okay? Because a person, most people, all of us, pretty much, we come to really enjoy the materialistic existence, which to a certain extent Hashem wants us to, right? But the point is, the more you get attached to the materialism of this world, the physicality, then you can't bear to part from it, because that's what you're used to, right? So, by Yaakov Avinu, it was just the opposite, okay? He, right now, was like, it was almost like he didn't have to be bothered by the cares and demands of the body, and he could serve Akash Baruch Hu fully without having to worry about eating, sleeping, all these things that we have to take care of. That's the way he looked at it. Don't get me wrong. This world is very valuable. This is where we could do Torah mitzvahs, the only place we can do it. Okay, but for a person like Yaakov Avinu, he did everything he had to do here, and now, Baruch Hashem, I get to serve Hashem without encumbrance of the body, fully spiritual, right? And that's part of me. This is very nice. He said that Yaakov Avinu perfected himself to the point that leaving earthly life meant no more to him, as we mentioned, to like removing a coat for us. His soul simply discarded his earthly garment and continued essentially unchanged. And that's what it means. Death simply did not exist for Yaakov Avinu. So, okay, so that's the metaphor, if you will. I'm sure there's a lot more to it, especially in mysticism. But it's an interesting point. Sometimes you see wicked people are blessed with wealth, quote-unquote blessed. That could be their undoing, because that wealth leads them to pursue materialistic and physical pleasures to such extent they get really into it. And not only they're losing out the next world, they're losing out this world. They lose out the chance, one moment of doing tshuva and good deeds in this world is worth more all of the next world, right? In Pirkei Avos. So what we look like as a blessing, that could be terrible for them. And a person who's poor, right? Impoverished. And sometimes that could be, depending on the personality, that could be a blessing. They get closer to Hashem. They concentrate on the spiritual. Don't get me wrong. We all ask for tranquility, and we all ask to have it well. And you just should know it's a bigger test when you have everything to still not get distracted from it and serve God with it. I'm just saying, in retrospect, if a person's in that situation, how one should look at it. We'll close with the following verse. Abomination is completely, you know, not allowed by us. Why was it allowed? Why did Yaakov do it? Why did Yosef instruct that he be done? You know, be a bond. Very deep question, and it's grappled with. And a few of the answers that I heard, number one, is that Yaakov's the body decaying in the ground is a very good thing. I can't go into all the reasons, but basically that atones, that starts the atonement process, and you can get to your place of rest. But a tzaddik, again, who perfected his body in this world where it's no contradiction to his soul, so the body doesn't need to decay. He already spiritualized it in this world. Yaakov Avinu's body wasn't going to decay. So Yaakov was worried, and so was Yosef, that the Egyptians would worship him as an idol. They'd never seen such a thing, a body not decaying. Therefore, let them embalm the body, and they'll think that's why it didn't decay. But the embalming was immaterial for Yaakov Avinu. So that's one of the reasons they gave. And there's a lot of others, a lot of other reasons. But if that's a very mystical concept in itself. Okay. Chapter 50, verse 20, I'd like to just close with this. And that is, after the burial of Yaakov Avinu, there was, they had a little bit of a hint that the servitude would start. So Yosef, knowing this, what did he do? He knew it would start by the brothers, you know, the Egyptians, feeling the Jews are being pushy and they're, you know, getting royal treatment, right, and trying to get too close to us. So therefore, what did Yosef do? He did not invite his brothers at the death of his father to his table to eat with him anymore, right, for their own benefit, that the Egyptians shouldn't get jealous and they should remain distinct in Goshen, also some other reasons, okay? The brothers misunderstood this, that Yosef may think until his father was alive, right, so he didn't take vengeance on us for what we did to him. But now that Yaakov, his father, and he, you know, is dead and he won't cause him any sorrow, now he's going to take vengeance on us. So they go before him and they plead to him, you know, and they're very concerned. And Yosef cries, you know, that he's suspected of this because he's completely has no animosity in his heart. But listen to the words. The words are very important, and the words are a key to anything that happens to us in general. V'atem chashavtem alai ra'a, Elohim chashva l'tayva. You meant to do evil for me. Hashem turned it for the good. Chapter 50, verse 20. Okay? A lot of things in this. First of all, Or Chaim HaKadosh says on this that the brothers were completely blameless. This is called an Avera Lishma, a sin for the sake of heaven. And that's a very hard concept for us to understand, but they thought they were doing the right thing. But what I wanted to concentrate on was that Yosef exemplifies this attitude, which we've mentioned in previous weeks, Gam Zu L'Toiva. If it is Hashem's will, nothing can get in the way. You know, Paro, what does he do? Next week's Parsha, you know, a decree to throw all the male children into the Nile River. Why? Because his astrologers see a redeemer of the Jews will come and he'll have a mishap with water. That's what they told him, right? So, but the will of Hashem was what? The will of Hashem was that Moshe would redeem the Jews, and that not only that, but you, Paro, are going to raise him in your court as your son. So you can have, you know, that's what it says, Rabat Machshavah Belevish, yeah, Ve'etzas Hashem Hitakum. A man has many, you know, I'd say in Yiddish, with a man, Troch and Gotloch, you know, a man plans right, right. So, again here, Yosef, his dreams were Nebuah, they were a prophecy that he would have rulership. The brothers thought they were doing 100% right. They thought he was an usurper, you know, and they thought all sorts of halakha things, and they made a halakhic decision. But the bottom line is, if Hashem wants it to be good, right, you meant bad, right, you thought, in retrospect, now it turns out that you want to do something bad. If Hashem wants to be good, it doesn't matter what any flesh and blood does. The will of Hashem will come through. This is an important lesson for this verse, V'atem chashavtem alai ra'a, Elohim chashva l'tayva, could be said to all the anti-Semites, through all the exiles of our history. whatever you tried to do to us, right, you meant bad, Akadosh Baruch Hu is going to turn around for good, right? I don't know how to interpret these things, but it certainly is more than a coincidence that 1948 we get the state of Israel back after the terrible Holocaust, right? It's certainly, one thing after another. The Navi even says this. The Navi uses the word, Es Sarahila Yaakov Umemena Yivashaya, right? From a trouble that happens, a source that happens to Yaakov, Umemena, from it, Yaakov will be saved. The Jewish people will save. So that's the simple meaning, but a deeper meaning says, Sfas Emes, Umemena Yivashaya, from the source itself will come the Yeshua, will come the salvation. And since the next holiday coming up is Purim, if you're Hasidic, Purim for the rest of you guys, right? Says the Sfas Emes, you don't see this anywhere clearer than on Purim. Everything Haman planned, right, rebounded on his head. He got appointed to viceroy. That position, went right over to Mordechai. He accumulated, he's one of the wealthiest people that ever lived. All that wealth went to Mordechai and Esther, right? He built his own gallows. He built, the gallows to hang Mordechai. He was hung on it. He issued a decree, right, the 13th of Adar, the lottery, the poor, to destroy the Jews. Him and the Persians and his sons were killed on that day. Says the Sfas Emes, Eitzarehi LeYaakov, U'memena Yivashaya, from it, from the Tzar, they will be saved. U'memena is the letters U'mehaman. From Haman himself will come the salvation. From every Haman and any time that's out there, what he thinks he's doing us bad, Elohim, Chashva, L'Tayva, Hashem will turn around for the good. From his evil designs itself will come our salvation. Utsu Eitza Visufar Davru Davru Loyakum Ki Manukel. They can plan and they can talk. But God's with us, they can't harm us. Good Shabbos.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.